Welcome to The Deadline. I'm Laura, your host and founder of the New Jersey Ghost Hunters Society. And of course, I'm here with ever-faithful tech companion, Brian Zant.
Hello.
Hello. So, oh man, I gotta tell you, this show is coming out this Friday, September 7th. This is the upload date for this. It's coming off the heels of Labor Day weekend. I escaped the Garden State. Let me tell you.
It's always temporary, though.
Yeah, 3,000-mile escape. I went out to California. I got to see a taping of what's going to be the first episode of Season 6 for Dr. Phil, airing on September 10th.
Ooh.
Ooh, yeah. I even bought myself a Dr. Phil mug. So I'm an official
mug. What was that,
$80? Mug. It was only $10. It was only, and it's a nice heavy one. It's a good quality one. So thank you, Dr. Phil. My friend that went with me, Christopher, I said to him, this is going to be like going to like a chick flick kind of thing. And sure enough, he gets there and he goes, you know, I've been counting and there's like one guy for every 20 to 25 women. So single men, here's your alert. When you go to a Dr. Phil taping, it's just, and they're already vulnerable and mushy squishy and looking for some kind of, you know, help or whatever. I mean, what a place to score if you're a guy. But I did enjoy it. I was two seats separated from Robin McGraw. She was in her little front row, her traditional seat, and you just went two people in between her, and I was in the top row behind her, so that was cool. And we went to the Hollywood Bowl and saw this Tchaikovsky spiel, you know. And it was they had the U.S. I think it was USC Trojans come on stage for towards the end with the 1812 overture, and they walk on stage full, you know, band, marching band gear, but they all had their Ray-Bans on. Not a one of them cracked a smile. They all were very serious, and the camera, because they have huge screens up so you can still see even though you're sitting far away. And the camera is panning all these Trojans, and they're playing, and they're completely serious, but all with their black Ray-Ban sunglasses on. It was hysterical. And then they had the fireworks go off, and oh, my God. And the sun, I mean, the heat out there, completely different. I mean, I was sporting a 30 SPF sunblock, and I still got color. I mean, that, and I only went to Malibu on Sunday, and we were there maybe an hour, hour and 15 minutes tops, and I was like, oh, man, it was 115 degrees. Not at the shore. Well, what we call the shore in Jersey, the beach in California, Malibu Beach. But it was probably a good 95 at the beach, and it was 115 in where he lives. Oh, my God. And actually, we got home, and I was like, it was too hot to even change out of my suit. And that's the wonderful thing about that dry desert heat. I mean, you get out of the water, and you shake off, and it's like, whew, you're dry. You know? Suit dries, it's like, gone. And they're bitching out there that they have 57% humidity. We've never had such humidity. I'm like, 57%? I'm like, that's a bone-dry day in Jersey. You know? I'm like, and let me tell you, if you have sinus problems and migraines, gotta move there. I had none. And I, at one point, was going out of my way between throwing off my sleep schedule, drinking, partying, eating cheese, eating crap that I know would have killed me with a migraine. Not. I took one Sudafed the whole time I was there. That was it. I didn't need any drugs to, like, survive. I'm like, I came home. Within a half hour, I'm talking to my dad as he's got me in the car, and I start congesting. I start choking. I'm like, I don't believe it. It's the air in this state of New Jersey. It's so bad.
So starting next week, we'll be known as the CGHS.
I know, I was thinking about it. I'm like, Chris is like, so, you think you'll come back out here? I'm like, you know, I would love to move out. Because even my friend at work, she's like, well, why don't you just move out there? If it's so much, I said, from a health perspective, it is so much better for me. Because I, my God, I wouldn't have to take all these drugs and everything just to get through a day. Because I could actually breathe. I wouldn't have a headache. But
you know the number for 911.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I'm sorry, people. In addition to fireworks, I actually got to experience fire working in the back of the house I was staying at. I did take pictures of the LA Fire Department trucks as they were right there in front of the house after I called them. And I was IMing with Brian, My friend had gone into his office for a couple meetings and stuff, and I was home alone in the house. And his house that he rents is like perpendicular to his landlord's house on the same property, so it makes like an L shape. And what's in the middle of the L is the nice swimming pool, so everybody gets to use that. But then directly in back of Christopher's house is another deck that has the jacuzzi, and there was this gigantic tree stump back there. Like, you could make it as a table, the tree stump. You just put a tablecloth over it, and you could fit a family of five around it. It's that huge. So I went out in the afternoon, and I was standing out there. I was contemplating, should I get in the pool or not? And I'm like, you know what? It's too hot. I'm going back inside. So I start talking with Brian on the internet, instant messaging, and he's like, what are you doing on the computer, blah, 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 blah. And I was like, oh, there's this awful smell. I think the landlord's burning something out there. Well, not for nothing, but, well, I don't want to get into that, but I'll tell you offline what I really thought it was because of a certain member of the family. But anyway, I thought they were either burning leaves or trash, and I was sitting in the living room.
Or you thought the weeds were burning.
Yeah, that's a way of putting it. So I finally said to Brian, I'm like, look, I got to log off. The smell is just making me so sick. I'm going to go into the back of the house where my little room was. And I figured, you know, all right, it should be okay back there. I thought they were burning stuff up the front of the house. So I go in back, I turn on the TV, I'm watching Dr. Phil, goes to a commercial break, and I'm like, oh, it was getting so intense. I'm like, I can't take this. I'm going to have to go out there and politely tell these people, knock it off. You're making me sick, you know? So I open the back door, which is right next to where my little room is, and I see flames shooting 10 feet in the air off this tree stump, and I'm like, I couldn't believe it.
Now, and that's a fire.
Yeah. It's shooting up into the air 10 feet, and then I see it. I look down because I'm still, like, in shock, and it's trailing under the fence, up this wooden fence. The fence is not 3.5 feet from the side of the house, okay, where the... I'm like, oh, my God, this is a real fire. So I go running back through the house, out the front of it, to see if I can find the landlord and tell him, and nobody's home. I'm like, oh, my God. So I go running back in the kitchen, and I saw he had like a little pitcher, a glass pitcher. So I dumped out just to make sure it wasn't vodka in it, and I rinsed it, and I loaded it up with water, went back out the back door, and just as
and,
I was...
And why would there have been vodka in it?
He likes vodka. I don't drink vodka. So I don't know, and he likes martinis. So I run out the back door, and just as I open the door, this other guy, Rick, is walking up, and he's like, because he was coming to get something. He said he stops at their house every day in the afternoon, takes a dip in the pool, and then goes on his back onto his work. And he walks in. I'm like, oh, my God, you're here. There's somebody here. Thank God. And he's like, fire, fire. And I'm like, go get help. And I threw the pitcher of water, and it made a really good dent in the tree stump flames. And I'm like, that's not going to help. And he went running, screaming for Alden, who's the landlord, and Linda, his wife. And Linda came running with the hose, but it didn't reach all the way. But she was squirting as best she could. I'm like, should I call 911? They're like, yeah. So I call, and I'm like, what's the address here? They're telling me the address. And then they're like, okay, we got the tree stump out. That should be fine. All right. I'm like, okay, never mind. Don't need you. And I hang up. And then Alden comes running back. Never mind, call them back. We do need them. Because he realized it not only had gone under the fence and up the fence, but it was all the way up the side of the fence and into this thing they call a wash. And then this thing called a wash, apparently, she said, Linda explained to me, they have these big mountains, which they do. And when it rains real hard, it's so fast and furious, they have to have like these kind of funnelly things. And they position them perfectly between the houses so the runoff from the mountain goes right into this wash and gets carried away without destroying your property. And the man who was their neighbor died earlier this year, and he was the one that always arranged for the service to come in and clean out the wash so it could drain properly. So it hadn't been drained. I mean, it hadn't been cleaned. And that's where when the fire department did come back, I mean, when they arrived, they finally deduced that that was the start of the fire. There was a whole bunch of burnt leaves, and it was concentrated. And we had, like I said, 115 in the sun. These leaves were all dried out. And even like Alden said, a kid could have just been walking through, cutting through the yard and throwing in a cigarette, and it just, you know, went right up. But it came all the way up the wash, up the fence, under the fence, onto the tree stump. And the L.A. Fire Department arrived, thankfully, and put that out. And so that was my adrenaline rush for the day of having to call. And they're like, I'm like, what is the address here? And they have five digits. I'm like, they're like, I'm sorry, man, but you should have five digits. I'm like, what is it, 2, 3, what? I'm like, you know, I only have one digit to my address. Why would you have and everybody has five. I mean, it's like a minimum of five numbers to your address. It was, oh my God. It was scary, though. I mean, because then when the fire department's on the phone with me, they're even telling me, is everybody out of the house? I'm like, I think so. He's like, go back in, make sure all the doors are closed, get out, get everybody out of the house. So I ran in. I thought, well, Christ, if this place goes up in flames, it's not taking my Nikon, and I'll grab my purse. I grabbed my purse and my camera, shut the back door, shut the windows, and I ran out and shut that door. Then I'm standing there and I'm waiting. I'm like, well, I got the camera, so I took a couple shots of the fire truck. You know?
So. Take pictures of the truck, but none of the hunky firemen, right?
Well, they were busy putting out the fire, and I'm certainly not going to distract them, you know, for something like a picture when they're in the middle of all that. So, yeah. But yeah. So, but I'll tell you, it was really. It's a really nice place. It really was fun, and it was so good to unplug from all the daily routine and, you know,
drama.
Yeah. Which leads me to my more bummer of a announcement, but I gotta say it. There's no more Ghost World, okay? If you see an advertisement for Ghost World 2008 in Gettysburg, let me know, because it does not exist anymore. Ghost World LLC has been officially dissolved. Partners Jeff Belanger, Laura Laddick, and Vince Wilson are no more. Now, that's not to say we don't exist on the planet and are still loving the paranormal world. It's just to say we're pooped, we had enough, been there, done that, sayonara. So we officially, you know, canned the idea of Ghost World 2008, and we dissolved the LLC. So I'm just telling you this because I don't want someone to try to ride on our coattails or pretend to be Ghost World and mislead you, the consumer, and end up taking your hard-earned money through PayPal for a conference that shouldn't be existing or using the name to begin with. Okay?
It's all right.
All right. So that's that. Now let's move along to our meeting announcements. Okay. We have on September 18th, the Northwest Division, that's in Hackettstown. Team leader Dina Chirico leads this meeting. It is in the Community Center's Blue Room, located at 293 Main Street. I should point out that all meetings start at 7 p.m. and end at 8:30 p.m. and are free and open to the public to attend. You do not need to be a member to go to an NJGHS meeting. Next one up at bat is September 27th. That's the Northeast Division, headed up by team leader Laura Lindemann at the Bogota Recreation Center, located at 162 West Main Street in Bogota. And then we have on October 3rd, the Central Jersey Division in Hazlitt. That's headed up by team leaders Gregory and Sherry Irish in the Hazlitt Library, located at 251 Middle Road in Hazlitt. You know, I pointed out the meetings are free to attend. Plus, if you have anything you want reviewed for Share and Scare, feel free to bring it along. Sometimes we have guest presenters and different things and such. I will be doing one more Mysteries of the Paranormal presentation on Saturday, September 15th at the East Brunswick Library at 6 p.m. That library is located at 2 Gene Walling Civic Center Drive in East Brunswick, and you can get the phone number from our website, as well as all these meeting announcements at njghs.net. All right? And you can check out the presentations page of the NJGHS.net website, where you'll see I'll be giving the Paranormal Investigating Capturing Ghosts Pictures and Voices presentation this Halloween season, which reminds me, I want to go through that because I like to always kind of tweak it and bump it up a bit, and so it's not the same old that you saw last year. It'll have a lot of the stuff that you like, you know, hearing the EVPs, the real classic ones of the scary ghost kids and yada yada. But I'll also put in some newer stuff from recent investigations and things, so give better examples of what's going on in our research. The list so far is September 30th, Burlington County Library at 2 p.m., October 16th, Washington's Women's Club in the Presbyterian Church Fellowship Hall in Washington, which is Warren County, that's at 7:30 p.m. October 18th, I'm at the Saraville Public Library at 7 p.m. October 22nd, the Matawan Aberdeen Library in Matawan at 7 p.m. October 24th, Washington Township Public Library at 7 p.m., and that's in Long Valley. And we just added one today, October 26th at 8 p.m. at the Cranford Public Library in Cranford, New Jersey. I did update the website. So like I said, if you go to the presentations page, you'll see all the dates, times, places where I'll be, and you can stop in. If you'd like your group or library to host this presentation, have them contact me at area code 908 325-0140, or email me at laurah@njghs.net. And please know there is a $100 honorarium for time and travel. Other than that, it's a good program if you want to bring people into your library, if you want to just get the word out about the paranormal. It's a pretty good, like, ghost hunting 101. So, let's take a breather.
Do you have what it takes to be a ghost hunter? Are you fascinated with the paranormal? Then why not take your interest to the next level and join New Jersey Ghost Hunter Society? For a $20 lifetime membership fee, you'll receive training on our cemetery hunts, get to participate on investigative teams for private investigations, and receive discounts on books we sell. Members also get the reduced rate on special events we offer throughout the year. You can PayPal right from the homepage of www.njghs.net or send your check or money order payable to Ghost Hunters to P.O. Box 8018, Parsippany, New Jersey 07054. Happy haunting.
I'm Jane Doherty, psychic medium and author of Awakening the Mystic Gift. And you're listening to The Deadline, podcast of the New Jersey Ghost Hunter Society.
Hey, welcome back. It's time for Parashare. This is the part of the show where you, the listener, actually send in your paranormal or ghostly experience that you may have had to thedeadline@njghs.net. Okay? And then we read them on the show. Because this is really cool. Because it's not just about us doing a show. It's not just about what research has been done. It's really for you. It's like by you, man. You got to share your experiences, because you never know, it may hit a chord of resonance with someone else who's listening to the show, says, oh my god, I had that happen too, and next thing you know, you actually have notes to compare. It's called research. Hello. Okay, anyway. So here's a parashare from ever-faithful team leader Dina Chirico. This past July, while attending Ghost World Conference in Gettysburg, which doesn't exist anymore, three friends and I went to investigate Sachs Bridge, Devil's Den, and Triangular Field. When we arrived at Devil's Den, it was approximately 1:40 a.m.
Shame.
Yes, we will pretend we didn't see that.
Or read that.
Or you didn't hear that. And we were completely alone. It was awesome. I have never been there without having other people present. Anyhow, the air and temperature were perfect. The sky was clear and the stillness was golden. Climbing up the rocks and just feeling the energy was nothing like I've felt before. It was actually energized, which raised my adrenaline. Next, we drove up a bit more to Triangular Field. One of my friends waited in the car because she was scared being out there at this hour. Not of ghosts exactly, but living people too. But my other two friends and I walked into the field. It was also very energized. As we were walking, I became more scared of the cicadas. Let me see a ghost, but not those big locusts. Yuck. Anyhow, as we continued to walk, we heard what we all thought was the sounds of a musket. It was clear, and yet we hesitated on asking one another if they heard it. When I opened the conversation, we all agreed it sounded exactly like a musket. I then checked the time. It was 2:10 a.m. A little past the curfew there, but that's okay. Now, being a natural skeptic, I said, oh, it's a reenactor screwing with people. But the sounds came from about 75 feet in front of us. There was no one there. We all kept quiet, hoping to hear it again. Sure enough, we heard another musket sound from the same area and distance. No one was there. As we walked toward it again, my heart began pounding. Whatever it was, we acknowledged it like it was a man still fighting the battle and thanked him for letting us be there. We didn't hear anything from there again. However, as we were getting ready to leave, we heard a third musket shot from diagonally behind us up near the ridge about 100 feet. Of course, none of us recorded it. One friend's recorder broke on his way to Gettysburg, and mine was full from a tour that evening. I should have just erased the tour at Devil's Den and used it to record our investigating. You live, you learn. Thank you, Dina. Yay! Okay. Now we have a report from... Well, we'll get to that. Hang on, I gotta turn the page over here. It's, gosh. I don't know. I think this is by Lansick, but I'm not sure.
Yes.
Okay. Fort Mifflin, August 18, 2007. Nice job, Brian San, on leading the team. The fearless crew of misfits into paranormal investigating. He did it all.
By myself.
By himself. He was leader on call, on point of contact. I mean, I did all the administrative crap in terms of promoting it, setting it up, and registering people. And then all I had to do was turn over the release to him and the head sheet, and everybody signed in.
And lack of sleep.
And yeah, and you did it all. But I couldn't have planned a more beautiful night.
Oh, God,
I mean, the weather was parimo. Here it is August, and it was like, what, 70 degrees, no humidity.
Maybe even less than 70, probably,
yeah,
at night.
No humidity. It was just gorgeous. So you had a nice, dry, cool, clear night.
The only bad thing about that fort that I have to say is that it's next to the airport, and it's basically right next to the landing path.
Mm.
So up until about midnight, about every couple of minutes, you hear a plane going over.
Oh, yeah.
So your EVPs are screwed till midnight. Then from about 12:30, 1 o'clock, till about 5:30 in the morning, it's
pretty quiet.
It's very quiet.
That's nice.
You hear a couple of boats every once in a while, but that's about it.
Yeah, because this is right on the water, too.
It's,
so you've got all that energy to charge the spirits and so forth. So it's pretty cool. So we got a parashare about it, actually. It says, "Hello, Laura and Brian. First of all, thanks to you both for the effort in putting this event together. As my son Mark's and my first outing, it couldn't have been better. Just the opportunity to have the run of the place was awesome. We're both history buffs, and that alone was special. But for this to be our first investigation made it a night to remember. And for the record, drum roll please." I can't do it. I bit my tongue in my sleep. There you go. My tongue is like so swollen it's killing me to even do the show. Anyway. "There were three, count them, three stalwart individuals who kept vigil the entire night. One Brian Sant and two Bylancix." Yay! So that's John and Mark Bylancix. Yay! "We haven't had a chance to review everything we brought back. We have 1.5 hours of audio and 40 minutes of video to review. We have, however, come across something that we caught on the digital recorder. By pure chance, at around 4 a.m., we took a break and downloaded the clips and started to listen to what we had. On our third location clip, we came across something. This was in Elizabeth Pratt's room, the screaming lady of Fort Mifflin lore. Below is the story and EVP file for the group, website, podcast, or circular file, your discretion." Well, we used it on the podcast. See that? "Thanks again for an amazing evening, late evening, early morning." And here's a submission. "During the August 21st, 22nd, 2000... Huh? We didn't investigate from August 21st to 22nd. Dude! You were there all night, starting on the 18th. So
dude,
it
you read over these ahead of time.
No, I didn't. I just copied and pasted.
Yeah.
So anyway, dude, you started out on August 18th and you ended on the 19th. Okay? Okay.
But we'll let it slide.
We'll let it slide, because you actually did a nice job on this.
And you gave us a
And it was better than the little thing that Brian sent me, which I did put on the website about the guard shack. Baby guard shack. You have to go to the investigation page of the NJGHS site, and then I'll put this other Fort Mifflin stuff up. But anyway. "So during the investigation of Fort Mifflin, PA, my son Mark and I were in the room of Elizabeth Pratt, often referred to as the Screaming Lady." Now, I mean, could they get any more unoriginal? The Screaming Lady. Any man will tell you that's like how you would describe. Well, maybe it's the lady part. You screaming whore. No.
Well, now we know somebody had a good weekend.
Yeah. Anyway, so it's referred to as the Screaming Lady. "In the officer's barracks at approximately 12:42 a.m., a digital voice recorder had been set up, and John remained in the front room while Mark took EMF readings throughout the front and back rooms. About 7 minutes into this recording, Mark returns to the front room from the back, and as soon as he crossed the threshold, he complained of feeling a very sudden ache between his shoulder blades, as if he had just finished a punishing workout. When he mentions this to me, I vocally marked the digital recording by saying, 'Check back 30 seconds ago from this point. Mark may have had an encounter.' We took a break at around 4 a.m. to review some of the files. When we got to the one from Elizabeth's room, we checked the timing of the encounter. And my marking statement was set at around 8:15 into the recording. Checking back, starting at 7:30, a sound can be heard on the recording, which is Mark's first footstep back into the front room, the point at which he felt the pain. Immediately following that, on the recording, we detect a soft, light voice saying, "Help." This is at 7:39, or nearly exactly 30 seconds before the point where I mentioned check back. Lorraine Irby from Fort Mifflin office discussed this with us the next morning and relayed to us information she did not tell us the night before, namely that Elizabeth Pratt is historically said to have hanged herself, but was revealed by a medium's visit to the fort the previous year as most likely having been murdered in that room. Aha! So the spiel they always give you is that, oh, this woman hanged herself, but the actual truth could be that she was murdered, maybe stabbed right in the back. Who knows?
From what Lorena told us, that back in those times, she was basically kind of crazy, and
she stabbed herself.
An officer's wife really didn't show well having a crazy wife, so they think they might have hung her.
Hanged her and then pretended like, oops, suicide? Okay. So Lorraine asked what we believe we captured as an EVP, and we said the word help. She nodded and said that that had been heard before, most notably by John Zaffis, who Lorraine said obtained one of his best EVPs from that room on his investigation. And they did include their EVP. I was going to play it on the show, but I guess I forgot. Did I send it to you?
No.
Okay, well, I forgot to do that, sorry. But I'll get it on the website so you can listen on the investigation page. The entire recording was examined in Audacity, which is audio software, and no similar sound to this EVP is heard. It is distinctly different than the voices of John and Mark or any of the surrounding noises captured on that or other recordings we reviewed so far. Very nice.
Yes.
Well, I'll have to play that recording on the website so people can hear it. Thank you so much, John and Mark, for attending the Fort Mifflin event, and thank you to all the people who participated. I think we're going to be putting together something like that again soon.
Right now,
we're kind of staring down the throat of pulling together our big 500-member celebratory bash. So when I get that all configured, then I'll do something with Fort Mifflin on the heels of that.
Right. Yeah. I mean, like I said, we had a great time there. They treated us very, very well there. I mean, they trusted us completely. I mean, 10 o'clock, they're like, okay, we're going to bed. If you need us, we're up in this room there.
Wow.
And we'll see you in the morning.
And
you have complete run of the whole place. Everything is fenced off, so I mean, you can't leave unless you know. They actually gave me the key to the gate.
Oh, darn, you shouldn't have said that. You should have said, no one's getting out alive.
Well, not unless they came to me.
Yeah. Now, the other thing you pointed out to me, which we should consider if we go back there, is I'm going to set up a schedule. So there will be certain rooms at certain times that if people want to put their camcorders in on tripods, then from like 9 to 10, that's Tripodville.
Right.
And then that's it. Because with a group of 25, 30 people, it gets a little difficult to just do some quiet observation, a.k.a. video surveillance. So we will have to get a better schedule so that way people, if they want to set up their tripods, there's not people stumbling in and out of the room and talking and ruining it.
Because it's actually kind of funny, the one of the casemates.
Is it casemate or casement?
Casemate.
Really? Because it sounded like she said to me casement.
Everywhere I've seen it spelled casemate.
Oh.
But maybe somehow it's pronounced casement.
I mean, Mark and Mark pronounced it casement. Lorraine pronounced it casement.
Well, look at the thing I gave you. I think the word's in there. I think it's casemate, but...
Or maybe when they say it quickly, it sounds
exactly.
like casement.
But when we walked in there, I mean, there was probably like 8 people just sitting around in there, you know, quiet. You know, but it's just like you're hearing every footstep and everything, so it kind of took away from it a bit.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, definitely, like I said, I mean, Eastern State is good. This one to me is even better. The energy in there, you can just feel it.
Yeah.
And like we said, you got the water right there as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think we'll definitely put together something again, but we'll be smarter in terms of the airplane schedule and setting up some surveillance rooms that people will be off limits to for certain times. So, you know, you can leave your camera in there uninterrupted.
And one of the interesting things is they found a new cell.
Really?
In the one next to the, I think it's called the torpedo room where they used to put the torpedoes down a tube and down into outfit the subs.
Hmm.
up on, it's like, it kind of looks like a big hill, and yeah. it goes inside, and up on the hill, they had some stuff that was roped off, and they said that one of the people that do some of the maintenance and stuff there had was mowing the grass, and it was kind of like the ground kind of sank a little bit, so they dug out a little bit, and they found like a hole. So they kind of followed the hole down into a cell that had been walled up and everything like that. And apparently, I don't remember the guy who they said was in it, but they found like some old like tins and stuff like that.
Wow.
That was probably like his last meal before he was hung inside the the fort.
Hanged. Well, people get that wrong all the time. You're right. The past participle conjugation of hang would be, you know, have as had hung. But when it refers to a human actually dying that way, it's always hanged, which is the ED ending. There you go, people.
So is it well hanged or well hung?
If you're using it descriptively in terms of the male anatomy, he's well hung. But if someone offs themselves or is offed, a human is killed by process of hanging, then they were hanged.
Of course, we just lost every listener we did have because they are all boring to hear.
Well, no, now you know. You can correct people. People have said to me, wait, is that true? And I'm like, yes, if you're referring to a human dying that way, they were hanged, not hung. Okay, whatever. Moving on. Let's go to commercial break.
If you're ready to take your ghost hunting to the next level, you're ready to be a certified paranormal investigator by the New Jersey Ghost Hunters Society. The certification includes 4 hours of hands-on, concentrated training by the NJGHS leaders at the most haunted prison in the United States, Eastern State Penitentiary, located in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. To participate, you must have all of your own equipment. Register online at the NJGHS.net website certification page. Costs are $125 for current members and $145 for non-members of the NJGHS who will receive their membership going forward. PayPal, MasterCard, and Visa are accepted. Upon completion of the course, submission of your report of findings, and achieving a total point score of 80 or better, you will receive your certificate and new certified paranormal investigator card from the NJGHS. All the details are on the certification page of the NJGHS.net website. So what are you waiting for? Take your hobby seriously. Become a certified paranormal investigator.
Start making plans now to join us for the paranormal event of 2007.
The Halloween Spooktacular, October 27th, at the Haunted Lincoln Theater in Decatur, Illinois.
Hosted by Troy Taylor, author of 50 of the best-known books on haunted history, not to mention the Ghost Hunter's Guidebook.
Meet the rock and roll ghost hunter Keith Dage from Sci-Fi Channel Spooked, and Del Kazmarek, president of the renowned Ghost Research Society.
Join in the discussion with Rosemary Ellen Guiley and psychic detective Ken Berg.
Meet Becky Ray and Laura Moon, host of Darker Side of the Moon Radio. And, of course, there's us.
The Ghost Man and Demon Hunter, live from the Ghost Man and Demon Hunter show.
If that's not enough, folks, there's a free tour of the Greenwood Cemetery and a big screen viewing of the 1932 classic movie, The Old Dark House.
There's even a haunted Decatur tour and a late-night hunt of the Lincoln Theater itself, sold on a first-come, first-served basis.
Sitting is limited, folks. Make reservations now at www.prairieghost.com/halloween.html or by calling 888-446-7859. Visa, MasterCard, Discover, and American Express accepted.
It's not just spooky.
It's spooktacular.
Hey, welcome back. It's time for Haunted Trivia. Now, last week on Haunted Trivia, you were asked about a pretty hot condition.
Actually, it would be last episode.
Last episode. Sorry. We skipped a week because we were vacaying. Okay, anyway.
Not all of us.
Well, I was. So, on the last episode of Haunted Trivia, you were asked about a pretty hot condition that I spoke about in my Mysteries of the Paranormal presentation this past summer. What is the condition? And the answer is spontaneous human combustion. Next thing you know, you're one crispy critter. Okay, this week's Haunted Trivia has a skill level of challenging. The ghost of a headless horseman appears along the stream just after sundown to observers on the opposite bank. The apparition rides a black horse that gallops down the west, downstream side. This ghost is believed to be that of a man who the stream is named for. This man's headless body was found on his property near this stream, propped up against a tree stump. His head was found a few feet away in a pile of leaves. His murderer was never found. What is the name of this stream where this headless horseman apparition occurs? Okay, name the stream. Be the first person to email the correct answer to hauntedtrivia@njghs.net, and you'll win the new NJGHS t-shirt. Yeah. Okay. So I want to remind everyone, stay tuned to the njghs.net website and sign up for our Yahoo groups. I've noticed lately there's been an increase. I'm getting about one or two people a day signing up to the Yahoo group, so that's great. That means people are paying attention or getting the hint that, hey, you know, you get those email blasts from Yahoo, and that's all it is. It's it will be an email. Set yourself up to get just the emails, and I'm the only one who does it, so it's not like some of those groups. I notice if you log in, and every time somebody sends out something, it blasts every single person, so you've got 60 emails in a day on one subject, and ours is not set up like that. I'm the only one who controls it. I'm the only one who publishes through it, so, you know, you'll get an email, and it'll tell you what I need to tell you, whether there's a new show up. A new show or a cemetery hunt's coming up or is being canceled or this, that, the other. So it's a good thing. It's free, so join that. Anything else, Brian?
I don't think so.
No. We had a good chat offline about more Fort Mifflin stuff, so we should include that at a later date for another PowerShare type deal.
Possibly, if I feel up to it.
Oh, yeah. God, he's going to go all diva on me now. All right, so thanks again to Brian Sant, the NJGHS technician and producer of The Deadline.
Hail to the king.
And our team leaders, Gregory and Sherry Irish, Dina Chirico, and Laura Lindemann. And thanks to you, Don Slepian of DonSlepian.com, for our theme song, Dance of the Dead. And of course, thanks to you for listening. Keep downloading the shows weekly, because at some point in life you have to meet the deadline.